Welcome back to another wonderful episode of the Grateful Together podcast. I am so happy you tuned in today, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. I have really taken the time out to sit down and dissect this in so many ways, and I hope that each and every one of you listening to it will gain the information that you need from it and that it'll bless you in many ways. So, with no further ado, let's get started. First of all, I just want to thank you for supporting this ministry and listening and sharing and liking and commenting and subscribing on YouTube and following the podcast. And for each and every one of you that has been here from day one, I really appreciate you. You know, it's hard standing in faith and doing what God has called you to do because sometimes you feel like what you do isn't enough. But in the midst of that, you really don't understand the impact you may have on someone by just showing up and just being yourself and doing what God has called you to do. And ultimately, that is what this message is about. The impact that you have, the impact that you carry on other people carries weight because of who you are influencing the world to be. You're showing your light through wherever God has called you to, and people notice it, and people notice it more than what you think. You may look at numbers and think, oh, well, I didn't get that many likes, or I didn't get that many shares, or I didn't go viral, but it doesn't matter about how many people didn't acknowledge what you did. The numbers don't lie, and I know this for sure because when I first started my YouTube channel, I remember posting it on Instagram and posting it on Facebook, and I remember I didn't get a lot of likes. I didn't get a lot of shares, but when I looked at my links that I had sent for people to sign up and to subscribe and to check things out, to check my blog out, my numbers from my website alone did wonders. But you wouldn't see that looking at the posts. Like, people were curious about, well, what is it that she doing, or this and that, this and that. So they went and saw, you know, and I knew that through the numbers, even with, you know, my YouTube, my podcast, you know, I look at the analytics all the time just to see, like, okay, even if it's one person a day, you've done what God has called you to do, because that's what he's placed us in this world to be light in a world full of darkness, and to be able to give our testimony, to be able to show the world the life that God has given us through grace and mercy and the things that he has pulled us from. Is it always going to be squeaky clean? It's never going to be squeaky clean. You know, everybody goes through things, and it doesn't matter how much you may think you know about a person. You never really know it all until you really spend time with God and allow him to show you the goodness of his grace. And that's what this message is about. So as you can see, the title of this message is Take a Shot. Take a Shot. Backstory, I got this name from a movie that I was watching called The Way Back. So it's about a guy who struggled with alcoholism. He drank a lot, but he drank a lot because of the problems that he endured in his life. And he didn't cope with those things well. He didn't handle them head on. He decided to turn to alcohol and drink his problems away. And in the midst of that, as he was drinking, he was losing it all. He lost his wife. In the end of the movie, you end up finding out that he lost his son. But it's crazy because in the beginning of the movie, long story short, he gets a call from his old school. He went to this Christian school, and the bishop ends up calling him. Come on, Lord. The bishop ended up calling him to answer a call to be the basketball coach of the high school boys. So he was the main character. His name is Jackie. He was a phenomenal player back in his day when he went to the school. He was, I think, three times the player of the year. 3 or 4 years in a row, he's the player of the year. And, you know, everybody knew who he was, regardless of how long he had been away from the game, regardless of how long he had been out of commission. Everybody still remembered who he was. That's the impact he had on his community around the world. People knew who he was. They remembered who he was because of the impact he left through what it is that God gave him a talent to do, which was play basketball. You know, and I think sometimes we look at what we do and we think that, oh, that can't be a gift from God, and I can't use that to pull people into God. But you have to realize that every talent and every gift comes from God. Now, the way you use it is determined on, you know, you have to ask yourself, like, does this honor God? And I remember a few years ago, I had an interior design business where I was doing staging, you know, and I ended up letting it go. For one, being honest, I did get, like, inquiries, and I got, like, a lot of people that wanted me to put things together and things like that. But at some point, it actually came from into a standstill. I wasn't getting anything. And I was like, well, I know that it's not going to be peaches and creams. I used to go out, and I was just telling one of my friends about this the other day, that I used to go out on weekends and go to open houses and get my name out there and talk to people. And I enjoyed doing that. But I ended up giving up that business because I couldn't find a way for it to glorify God. Like, I couldn't find out how I can use this business to draw people back into God. And so I battled with it for a long time, and I kept, like, kind of doing stuff and kept, you know, doing this. I used to host mood board events, like you guys know, if you, like, know that about me. I had mood board events, and those were phenomenal. People showed up. People showed out. And I was really surprised at the turnaround, because I, in that matter, I was like, dang, you know, not even realizing the capacity of what I was doing, the weight of what that carried, that people showed up and they actually participated. Like, I remember the last one that I hosted, like, this lady, she just, like, loved it. She was like, I've never seen anybody do a workshop like this. She was like, I think it's very important because it gets you to really dissect and look at this and that and this and that. And she understood where I was coming from, because she was also getting ready to go into getting her certification for being certified to be a stager. And so I was like, that's just so, it's so wonderful, the people that God will bring in the journey that you're going on. You never know how your small step of faith will give the next person the boost of energy to say, you know what, if she could do it, I can do it. And not out of, like, envious, not out of, like, maliciousness, not out of jealousy, but out of inspiration, you know, and aspiring. Not even idolship, because I know sometimes we look at people and like, oh, I want to be like that person, but we don't know what it takes to be that person. We don't know what it takes for that person to wake up every day and get in their shoes and walk it out. We see what we see on the outside, but we don't know what goes on in the daily life of people. Even when you know them personally, there's some things that people battle in silence. There's some things that we don't feel led to share, and there's some things that we don't have to share because we battle it on our own, and we let God fight our battles, and we walk it out, and we show up, and we smile, and we encourage the next person. When in the midst of it all, sometimes we don't even have that courage and that faith to instill it in ourselves. Like I told you guys on 320, when I hosted that Bible study, there was one of my old coworkers who showed up, and I had prayed before the Bible study, and I said, God, even if it's just one person, I'm going to show up for that one person like I would 10 people. And only one person showed up that night. Was I upset? No. I went through the regular schedule program in the same way I went. And at the end, she said, you know what, Jasmine, I really think that God allowed this to just be me and you, because had more people would have shown up, I wouldn't be able to have this encounter. I wouldn't be able to be vocal the way that I am. I wouldn't be able to open up the way that I would have. And I told her, I said, girl, listen, you got to know that God loves you, and you got to know that he hears you, and he knows you enough that even when we feel like, dang, in my mind, I could have been thinking like, dang, you know, nobody showed up today. You know, I don't want her to think like nobody ever comes and stuff like that. But whole time I'm like, you know what? No, because I know what I pray before each and every Bible study. And I pray that whatever I need to say and whoever needs to hear it, that they come. I don't care if it's just that one time, because that one time could have been that one time when you heard what you needed to hear. And so in that moment, you know, you have a choice whether you're going to let that one person that show up to hear how you show up, or you're going to take that and say, you know what, God, you are so good, because you left the 99 to get the one. That's all it takes, is one person. And if I can speak life into this one person, even when I barely have life for myself, it matters. Because just in the midst of me speaking to her, God was speaking to me, through me to her. I needed to hear the same message that she was hearing. Isn't that crazy how you're in a room where, you know, a few people show up every month to hear the word, and in this world, it's just me and her, but God is speaking through me to her, but also speaking to me. While I'm speaking to her, the same lesson, the same message that he wanted to get to her was the same message that I needed to hear. Because before I logged in to do the Bible study that day, I got some horrible news. And I broke down crying. I shared that with you guys. I was literally crying, like literally getting myself together as I was logging in for Bible study. How do you do that? How do you show up when you don't know how to show up for yourself, but you show up for other people? And that's why I said, you know, you never know the impact. So it had, and I honestly was battling like, oh, I'm going to cancel it. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to cancel, because this is what I've been called to do. And I'm going to do it regardless if there's tears streaming down my face. I'm going to do it whether I'm sleepless or if I'm agitated. I'm going to show up because there's somebody on the other side waiting to hear what I have to say. And not technically what I have to say, but it's, they're waiting on a word from God. They're waiting to hear what God's going to say to them today. God's going to use me to speak that life into that person. And I'm thankful that I didn't allow the enemy to make me sabotage and say, you know what? I'm going through my own thing, and be selfish and say, you know what? I can't do Bible study today because I can't keep it together. And I told myself that if I get on here and I break down and I cry in front of whoever's on here, that's okay. Because this is my real authentic self. And that's why I say you never know how your impact help somebody. I was sitting here having a conversation the other day with one of my old coworkers, one of my friends. She's not a coworker anymore, but she's my friend. And we were talking, and I was going over all these things that have been happening to me ever since I left my job and everything. Like, and I just sitting there telling her from this thing to that thing to this thing, this, I didn't even realize how many things were actually taking place. And I said, this is why I'm so tired. This is why I'm so drained physically, mentally, and I'm exhausted, because all these things the enemy has been trying to do, and it's taking a toll on my body. And she said, you know what, Jazz? You've been doing this. And I told her, I said, I don't even understand why it's so hard now, because I've been doing my podcast for a while. And she said, you know what? It's because you're reaching more people now. And I will never forget that, because I said, you know what? You're right. And I went and I sat down and I looked at my numbers on YouTube, and I said, you know what? You're right. Every day the number goes up. I don't care if it's by 5. I don't care if it's by 10. Every day there's somebody getting to hear the word of God through what I'm doing, through my obedience. And the enemy doesn't like that. And that's why I said you never know the impact you have on somebody. So continue to show up and do whatever God has called you to do in the places that he's called you to do it. Because I know sometimes people look at other people's calling, and they're like, oh, well, I want to do that, and I want to do it this way. And God says, no, I have something better on the other side of your obedience. If you just be obedient and submit to what I'm calling you to do. Sometimes that may look like taking a step back. Sometimes it may look like you're taking a loss. But in the midst of it, you're losing it to gain it all, because God has already paid it all for you. He's paving the way for you. And in what feels like a loss, you're actually getting a great opportunity, because God's going to use you in that place where you feel like you can't be used. So sometimes we got to change our perspective, and sometimes we got to say, God, okay, this is how I feel, but I know that you wouldn't do that to me. And even if you are pushing me back, you're going to shoot me forward. So help me to see it the way you're seeing it. Help me to understand what you're doing in this hour. And that's basically what this message is about. So just like I said, long story short, the takeaway was a movie about a young man named Jackie. He was a phenomenal basketball player, left a mark on the world. They remember who he was. The town knew who he was just by name. But they also, just in the matter of them knowing who he was as a basketball player, they knew who he was in that current day. So once he answered the call from the bishop, or from the father, to be the coach of these boys, people remember who he was, but they also remember, like, oh, he's also a drunk. Like, I'm surprised we get, one of the guys said, like, I'm surprised that we can keep him on the court as much as we can keep him in the bars. Like, oh, he showed up today, but I know he'd be at the bars being, like, pissy drunk. And that was the truth, because, you know, he would go to the bar and drink all the time. But he ended up accepting the role of being their coach, and ended up changing his life for the better. At one point, he stopped drinking, and he decided to change his life. But then it's just like, isn't it just like, oh my God. And I was thinking about this the whole time. I thought about, the whole time I was watching this movie, I thought about the story of Peter. When he went back fishing, and I talked about this before, when after he denied Jesus 3 times, and he goes back and he says, you know what, guys, I'm going to go back fishing. And what that meant was he's going to go back to what he's used to. He's going to go back to his old life before Jesus asked him to follow him. And, you know, he goes back and Jesus meets them back there in the boat. And he takes him to the place where it all started, where he denied Jesus at the, where was it? The charcoal fire. He was standing there warming himself, and, you know, God had prepared the fish and everything for him, and he had the fire already lit. And so God recreated the scene to remind him that, you know, I know what you did, but I still called you. I know who you are, and I know that you're afraid, and I know that you feel like it's over for you, because you felt like, oh, you denied me, and now I will never be in the presence of God again or Jesus again, and I can't be a follower because I denied you. Look at what I did to you. And Jesus told him that, I want you to follow me. Be a leader of my sheep. Be a fisher of men. Follow me. Keep my commandments. So the whole time I was watching this movie, I was reminded of Peter, because in one instance, you know, he answers the call that the father gives to him to be the coach to this team of young men. And he starts in shaping them and leaving an impact on him that's greater and beyond what he could even imagine, because he didn't even see himself qualified. And when the father ended up calling him to answer the call, he sat down and he was like, you know, think about it. Because, you know, the father could tell he was kind of like hesitant. He said, you know what, go home, think about it. And so when he got home that night, he kept like mocking a call like to him to deny, like, I can't do this. I can't do this. And he's like, you know, I've been out of the game for so long. Like, isn't it just like us that when God calls us, we start making excuses and, oh God, but you know, I can't do that. I'm a single mother. Oh God, you know, I can't do that. I just got out of this heartbreaking. I can't do that because I just lost somebody. And I can't do that because I just lost my job. And I can't do that because I don't have the resources. And I can't do that because I have a asthma issue, as you can hear me wheezing. You know, I can't show up for people because, you know, I don't have the time. And I have all these kids. And I have this job. And I have this, and then this, and that. And then it's basically like you're giving God reasons as to why you can't do it. But God already knows your resume. You don't have to sit down and pinpoint each and every moment that God has already showed up in. He knows your ins and outs. He knows your inside and you're out. He knows your heart. He knows your intention. And because of those things, he's called you. He didn't call you because of what you look like. He didn't call you because of what your flaws may be. He calls you because he loves you. And he sees that you can do abundant things through what it is that he's calling you to do. And through that, he's going to give you abundance because of your obedience. And so he sits down. And he goes back and forth and he's like, I can't do this because I've been so far out of the game. I can't do this because I don't have the time. He's a construction worker. And I thought that was dangerous because you're a construction worker, but he's actually drinking on the job. And all I could think about in my mind throughout when I first watched him, I was like, oh my God, one day he's going to fall off that building because he's drunk. Like he's drinking. He put his like beer in like a tumbler. So he's drinking all day, but he's doing construction. I'm like, how? It's such a reckless game. But in that moment, he doesn't see it as reckless because this is how he copes. This is what gets him through the day. This is what's allowing him to show up to work because he can still do what it is that makes him comfortable outside his comfort. So he can show up to work, but he's drinking on the job. So this is how he gets through the day. This is probably the only thing that's still keeping his job because he can show up and still drink. Isn't that such like us? Like we stay in things and we cope with it. We do whatever we feel is our coping mechanism to get through it. And when we lose it all, we start figuring it out in a way that we never thought that we would be able to. And I just remember thinking like, dang, he's going to fall off that building one day. Or, you know, in the movie, because I was just like, he's drinking on the job and he's like up in the air. He's building like buildings. Like you're drunk. Like you're drinking all day. Like in the morning he drink. And even as he was like the basketball coach, he was drinking before the games and drinking in the practices. So I was like, oh my God. But so if you have not seen the movie, I definitely recommend you watching it from start to finish. You're going to shed a few tears because I cry. I'm a big crier when it comes to movies like this. But it was a great movie. So so basically like a backstory, you know, like I said, he sat down and gave like excuses as to why he couldn't answer the call. But then he ends up answering the call, right? He ends up showing up for these young men and being their coach. And he doesn't know the first thing about coaching, but he knows how to play the game of basketball. And sometimes, oh my God, sometimes it's not about what your title is. You don't have to be a coach to get in the game and be a leader to impact the world. You don't have to be a person who sits down and who's never written out a blueprint, because all it takes is your mind. You use what you know. He got on that field and he coached those boys based off of what he knew. He was the greatest basketball player in that community for 3 or 4 years in a row. So he knew the game. He knew the game. So he took what he knew and he used it. You take what you know and you use it. And in our sense, it's what God showed us. It's the word of God. You take what the word of God says and you apply it into your everyday life so that what you know is then applied to what other people know because they know God through you. You don't have to be qualified to do what God calls you to do because he qualifies to disqualify. Where people and men disqualifies us, he qualifies us because of our flaws, because of our imperfections. He qualifies us when people say no, he says yes with a capital Y, a capital E, and a capital S. He qualifies us. So let no man tear down what God has built up in you. Stand tall and be bold. Answer the call. I don't care where it's at, on your job, in your kid's life, at the school, if you're coaching, if you're, you know, a cheerleader coach, if you're a mentor, if you fast food worker. Coincidentally, and that's why I said, you know what? Because I was going to record a live video for this. I said, you know what, God? It ain't got to be perfect. I got to just get it out. And I was talking to my friend on the phone early, and she went to a restaurant to get some, to get a corrected order that she placed yesterday. And she was like telling me about the manager there. And I told her, I said, you know what? It's men like that, or just men in general, man or woman. It's people like that who deserves to be in, though. He's fit for that role. Yeah, you may have a person that comes in who's a CEO, a COO, a CFO, and thinks, oh, he's just a manager at a restaurant. But this is a man of integrity. He was responsive to her issue. He was apologizing. Not only did he fix her issue, but he went in there and fixed it himself and gave her some more of what she got more than what she originally bargained for. Because that's what it looks like when you answer the call of God. This man may not even be the happiest person in this role, but you wouldn't know that because he shows up and he's energetic. He's apologetic. He thrives in this role. I haven't even met this person, and I can tell that just by what she shared. And that's how it works. When you start talking about, oh, this person, and then it starts getting out word of mouth. That's how it works. That's how the gospel works. And I knew right then, I said, you know what? I got to mute all these distractions and get focused, and I got to put this message out because today's the day that it has to be getting out. People need to hear it because there's somebody sitting down disqualifying themselves, and God is saying, I just need you to trust me. I just need you to show up, and I just need you to say, you know what? I will leave it all. And like I told you guys in a short that I did the other day about the overflow in my coffee, I didn't post that part, but what I said was I could see... It's in the end of the short. But I said, I could see why the man, when he said, leave everything behind and follow me, why the man was hesitant. I personally can see that. Here I am at a job, working a job for once in my life, working one job that didn't 100% pay all my bills. But by the grace of God, we never went without, and my bills were always paid. That's nobody but God. You have to see what God is doing in the midst. But sometimes you have to let go of what you think you need and gain what God wants you to have. And I said, you know what? Here I am leaving a job that gave me stability, gave me so many things that I could never give myself, good benefits, like just across the board, a good company overall. Flaws, yes, but what company doesn't have their flaws? But for the most part, I was fine where I was. And God said, but I'm calling you to greater. Do you believe that I can do this for you? And I think that's a question. It's about, do you believe that what God says to you is true, not only just for you, but about you? Do you believe what God says about you? Do you believe what it is that the word of God says about who God is? To know God, you got to get to know his word. You got to get to know the character, and you got to ask God, is this in your character? You got to continuously get to know God every day to learn that God would never do anything to harm me. And his word says that. He knows the plans, Jeremiah 29:11, to prosper us, to give us a hope and a future. And I told you guys before, future is a good word because that's not just today. That's forevermore. So don't sit around and be like Jackie. Don't give excuses. Don't be like Moses. I thought about Moses in this moment because, listen, when God called him out of that to that holy ground on that burning bush, and he says, I want you to get my people. I've heard the cry of my people, because God is a God who hears the cries of his daughters and his sons and his kings and his queens. God hears us, so he sends people to get us out. God is sending you to deliver his kids from bondage. And what did Moses do? Moses made excuses as to why he couldn't show up the way God wanted him to show up. He gave excuses. Oh, well, God, you know, I'm not adequate when I speak. You know, I can't do that. Pharaoh, I can't go back. I ran from there. I can't go back. And God called him to be courageous. And he said he would lead him. Use this staff. God, I will guide you. Do everything I tell you to do, and it's going to be okay. And what did he do? He followed it, and he took a step, and he went back. Even though they took it as a joke, they didn't take Moses serious. They didn't take God serious. And sometimes they're not going to take you serious. People are like, girl, you want to do what? God told you what? Yeah. Because my thing is, when God called you, it wasn't a three-way call. He didn't three-way somebody else in to say, you know what, I need you to approve this call. No, it was a conversation between you and God. So don't ever let somebody tell you that God didn't tell you what God spoke to you. Now, if God didn't say it, he didn't say it. And evidence of that will be that it never comes to pass. And it's okay to hear God wrong sometimes. And that's why you got to search it out and say, God, is this what you're telling me? And that's what I did before I actually moved and took that step of leaving my job. I had to confirm with God, I need you to be clear. I need you to make it plain. I need you to put it in my face and let me know this is from you, because I cannot take a risk that is not sent from you. I can't take a step out on faith that is not technically faith if you didn't give it to me. If the enemy's trying to taint something, I need to know. But God made it clear, this is my voice. You know my voice. And you're talking, you're asking me this out of fear. And it's okay to be afraid. But trust me, use your faith. What is faith? Believing that it's going to happen, even when it looks like it's not. In short form. Remember Hebrews 1. Hold on to your faith. So, you know, and I, like I said, watching this movie, I was reminded of Peter. I was reminded of Moses, because, like I said, he sat there and went over and over of why he couldn't be called and why he couldn't do this. So, in the long run, he ended up answering the call and becoming these boys' coach. So, as he's on the first day, he shows up to, what did he do? He showed up to meet the boys, right? And, I lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? Yeah, so he shows up to the court for the first time, and the assistant coach is asking him, like, oh, well, do you want me to go run from run, play by play, and introduce the boys as they're, you know, practicing or just playing around or whatever? And so the coach is like, yeah, you know, he's like, do you want me to call him over here to do intros? He's like, nah, you know, you don't have to take it that deep, but, you know, give me a rundown of what I'm up against. So it was 10 kids. And he said, you know, just 10 kids. And he's like, yeah, you know, he said, I remember just 100 kids trying out back in the day when I was playing. And then the assistant coach says, well, we had 104 tryouts in my time. So he's like, oh, you played for the team. He's like, yeah. He was like, you know, but I wasn't as good as you. And that reminded me that people know this man, like, regardless of what he's been through, regardless of his regardless of his drinking issue, people remember who he was. He made an impact, and it left for generations. Like, this man is fully grown, so he hasn't been in high school in years, you know. That's just like me. I graduated in 2011, but I'm pretty sure people are like, oh, you know, this part, I went to high school with her. Or, like, just like I said, in the last Bible study, that was a young lady that I worked with back in 20, I worked with her at Citibank back in 20, what was that? I moved to Atlanta. I left there to move to Atlanta. And I talked about that time in my life recently. So it was just crazy that, you know, she showed up and came to Bible study, because I was like, wow, God will remind you of the past and remind you how he got you through that time, you know, because there was a lot of people on the fence, like, oh, you know, why are you gonna move to Georgia? You don't have no family there. You don't have no job there. Why would you do that? And I knew what I had prayed. I knew what God had spoke, and I went, and it worked out, you know, better than I could have ever imagined. And, you know, I had a choice whether I wanted to come back. And I talked about that before already in the Unthinkably Good Things podcast. If you have not listened to that, part one and two, I highly recommend it. But I talk about that in part two, about how I was running from, you know, what I now can sit in and have abundance in. So it's just crazy, you know, that she showed up, because I was like, wow, you know. But yeah, so he says, you know, why? He asked him, why? But the assistant coach tells him, you know, I was a player on the same team, but I didn't come close to playing. I always rode the bench. Like, basically, he's like, I never really even stepped foot on the court, but I was on the team. And he's like, oh, okay. So then he starts, you know, introducing him to the 10 kids that's on there and just calling each person out. So just to give you an idea, because it's going to make sense later, but giving you context. So the best player on the team was a guy named Brandon. He was the point guard. He was the one who was turned in later from point guard to the captain of the team. So he was the one that led the team. Because of the coach, Jackie, seen the potential in him, and they both knew, the assistant coach and the coach and Brandon knew that he was the best player on the team. And in the, I'll explain this down the line, but there's a conversation between the coach, Jackie, and I'll just call him Jack, but the coach, Jack, and the boy, Brandon, the blessed player on the team, where he's taking him home, and he lets him know that he's the blessed player on the team. And he asks him, why don't you believe that? Like, why is it hard for you to believe that you are the best team player on the team? He said, I watch you and I know that you know the game better than any of these boys out here. You can break it down in any, many ways that they don't even understand. That makes you the best player. It's not because of how many free throws you can throw. It's not because of how many people you can guard or whatever. Like I told you guys, I don't know anything about basketball, but it's not because of how you run up and down the court, but it's because you dissect it and you understand it in ways that they couldn't even imagine. Yet you guys are on the same team. And that takes me back to what the assistant coach said. I played on the team, but I rarely got on the court because I sat on the bench. So I wasn't like you, but we played on the same team. And sometimes God will pull you from the bench and call you out. Or he'll place you next to people who could be qualified, but because you are the person that God is calling to do what it is that you're supposed to do, he reserves that spot for you. That assistant coach could have easily stepped up and took that spot, but because that spot was for such a time as this, come on, Esther 4:14, such a time as this, you are called. God reserved that seat for you, and where another man resides, he will replace them and put you where you were originally supposed to be in the right time for such a time as this, appointed time. That assistant coach could have easily said, you know what, I'll take it on, I'll sacrifice, if he really wanted to. And that position, that head coach position was for him, he could have made it work. And the reason I say that is because in the end, he ended up making it work and he becomes the head coach. And I'll get into that in a second. But you still have to know that Coach Jack was supposed to be there at that time, because that was the time where God was going to do a miracle in his life to get him where he needed to be, to run away from those things that he was coping with. So regardless of, and I think that's so good, because in a lot of times we think that God's going to do it one way, and God shows up and says, nah, you're going to have to go through some things for me to fully use you. You're going to have to get rid of some things for me to use you. You're going to have to go through some things. You're going to have to be isolated by yourself and confinement with me and you. You're going to have to be able to know my voice immediately. You're going to have to know when I'm speaking and when the enemy's speaking. You're going to have to know when your thoughts are trumping over what I say, and you're going to have to learn me. You're going to have to know my character. And in order for me to do that, I got to take you through some things. But I guarantee you, when I take you through them, I'm with you the whole way. I'm with you each and every step. Just like he got in the fiery furnace with the Hebrew boys, God was in there. Not only was he in there, but he protected them. He got them out untouched, unharmed. But what did he do? He allowed the people that threw them in there to burn and die. You think he won't do that for you? God will keep you in your position as long as you're supposed to be there. And even when we get it wrong, God gives us time to correct it. Think about Saul. And I tell myself this all the time. I say this all the time. I don't want to be Saul. I don't want to be the proud God's most proudest. I don't want to be, oh, you know, God was so honored. He honored him. And then it turns around and it's like, oh, well, God was disappointed that he ever put him in place. What? Because Saul did what Saul wanted to do. You can't get into this call and do what you want to do. You got to do it the way God told you to do it. But God will allow you to do whatever you want because he gives a free will. But the choice is yours. Are you going to do the right way? And that was something that God gave me, that once I accepted this call, if you continue to make the right decisions and things, you don't take less. You don't take turns based off of fear. You don't run back to your past. You don't do any of those things. Things will go the way they're supposed to. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy. There's going to be times where you're going to have to go through something, because I'm building something in you. And I can't wait to dissect this, because there's a play in the movie that they call, it's called The Pressing. The Pressing. And I'm going to get into that. But so he's running over, going over to people. So Brandon was the best player on the team. He's the point guard, but he ends up being the captain as well. So he's calling out the plays. He's number three, by the way. Come on. He's the best team on the field. He's number three. 3-1. Come on, Lord. And then the next person I got is the back. He was in the backcourt. His name is Ronald. I don't know nothing about the backcourt. In the wing, we had the solid shooter. His name was Kenny. We got Marcus. He played center. He was the tallest person on the team. He was 6'3". And something good about Marcus to know that, you know, he was 6'3", but nobody trusted him to make those shots, because I think there was a percentile that he had where it was like his free throws, but he only made like 30 free throws out of like 160 something. And so, you know, the whole time he's thinking like, oh yeah, 30 shots. And he was like, well, how many total shots did he have out of those ones that he made? And the numbers was like, oh man. He was like, you know why nobody's throwing to you? Because they don't trust you to make those shots. And so I thought that was really good, because, you know, he was playing center And something that could have been a good thing, because his height, he had an advantage over everybody else, but nobody trusted him enough because he could never really make the ball when it was time, whenever somebody delivered it to him. So then we got Sam. He was the senior captain at the time. He was a solid defender, but he ends up being stepped down, or not stepped down, but he ends up being just the solid defender, the defenser. I guess that's how you say it. I don't know. Because Brandon ended up becoming the captain. And then White Shadow, we had Bobby. And those are all the people that they went over. I know it was only 10 guys, but they only went over, I think, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, he was going to go through the first 5. So those are the people that he went over, just giving you guys context. And so, like I said before, the assistant coach is a person who played on the team too, but like he said, I'm nothing like you. Like, I played, but I'm nowhere near. Like, even if we get out here today, I know you would crash me. Like, you would dunk on me, you would slam dunk, you would have it all together. And so, and there's a point where Jackie asks him, why doesn't he take the position? Like, he's like, you know, why didn't you take the position? And the assistant coach replied that we all have our cross to bear. So basically telling him that, you know, he had so much other things going on at home that it didn't allow him to take the head coach position. But like I said, when it comes necessarily, you step up and you sacrifice and you do what you need to do, because that's what it comes down to. And that's why I said in the beginning, he didn't take the position because it wasn't his time. It wasn't time for him to step up and do what it is and take over, because Jack needed that position. He needed that to change his life, so that potentially, I'm pretty sure, like, if another movie would have came out, the movie would have extended, he would have came back and been a coach, and he would have been the best coach in the history. So he would have went from being a great basketball player to the best coach in history, because he knew the game better than anybody. And he not only, and I feel like even though the movie ended with him, you know, going to rehab and getting help and being isolated, but by himself, because he got to be able to sit down with him, because sometimes we get so consumed with what we do and how we cope with things that we forget to see us. We don't even like the person we see in the mirror. So God moved him from the place that he used him, and he allowed him to sit down and look at himself in the mirror. And that's when he started taking accountability, and that's when he started realizing, like, I lost it all, and I didn't protect my wife the way I'm supposed to when we lost our son. And the interesting thing about the son thing is, when the father calls him, he asked him, how you doing? He's like, you know, oh, well, I'm doing good. And so the father asked him, got any kids? And he says, no. So at that point in the beginning, you don't think he has kids. And then as the movie goes on, you don't see any traces of a kid. And then you don't hear about a wife. But he does talk about his wife. He says that, you know, we're separated. And, you know, so it gives you context. It lets you know. And that's just like God, because we see what we see, but in order to understand why this man had a drinking problem, you had to know what he's gone through. So it gives you context to let you know what this man has been gone through. He was married. He was a good basketball player, had a foot. And then in the span of the movie, you find out that he ended up getting a scholarship, full ride scholarship, but he ended up not taking it. I'm going to dissect why he didn't take it in a moment. But so you find out that, okay, he was married. He was a great basketball player at one point in time. He had a full ride scholarship. And then later on, you end up finding out that he had a son. But the son ended up dying because of, I think, brain tumors. Let me see. I wrote it down. I think it's brain tumors, because I remember he said that, you know, he had to go through like 30 rounds of radiation. And he still ended up passing. But you don't find that out until he meets up with the ex-wife, or currently wife, because they were separated. So he meets up and they go to, because I guess they haven't really told anybody that they're not together. They're married, but they're separated. So they haven't been together in, like, I think she said over a year. So they end up going to one of the kids' baseball birthday parties. And then later on, the kid end up, like, relapsing and going back into the hospital. So I guess his son and their son was in the hospital at the same day. They went through the same thing, but his son didn't make it. And so as they get to the hospital, he tells, once they leave the hospital, he tells his wife that, she was like, you know, I feel bad because going to the birthday party and seeing all the other kids around, and I know they want us to show up to, you know, because they don't want to forget us, and they know that, you know, we lost our son. They just wanted us to feel included. I know it's not a bad thing, but she was like, you know, is it bad that I feel angry? I'm mad because, you know, I got to go to somebody else's birthday, but my child didn't make it. And so the husband ended up telling her, the coach, Jack, he ends up saying, I never got over being angry. And so, I thought that was good, because it tells you right then and there why. It tells you who that person is. It tells you why he's going through what he's going through, because of anger. He's upset because he lost his son. And, you know, he says that, you know, I miss my son and I don't believe he's in a better place. I believe that the best place for him was with me here on earth. I miss him and I can't live life without him. I don't know how to cope through this. And I can't be the husband to you because I don't know how to cope with grieving my son. And I can't be what God has called me to be because I still am angry at God because he took my son. That's the moral of the story. You get it. In that moment, a movie that was almost, what, I would say an hour and a half, you get the whole context right then and there. You get to see who Jack is. Jack is a young, angry person, an angry man at God, who's angry with God because God took the best thing that was in his life. And because God took that best thing from him, he lost every, his sight wasn't correct. And it reminded me of Saul. When he saw that light and his eyes were blinded, and then he goes to the man and the man restores his sight. And he gets to see that in the walk when he was crucifying Christians, God says, "Why are you killing me? Why are you doing this?" He was blinded. He couldn't see. So God allowed his sight to be a little off. He couldn't see. The light was so bright that it tainted his light. And then he says, go to this place. And this man, he prays over him and he speaks life. And then his sight is restored. So sometimes you get in there and you lose sight of what it is that every good thing that's around you. And so you lose those good things because you're still bitter and you're hurt about what you lost. But I tell you, in God's word, it says that the pain that you have experienced doesn't compare to the joy that is coming. What you lost is not better than what's coming. So you got to continue to be receiving in the coming because you know that God got your back. In Romans 8:18, the pain that you have been feeling cannot be compared to the joy that is coming. And sometimes we miss out on that because we're so busy mourning the thing that we lost. It has been years. It's been decades. And some of these things are never coming back. For me, I can speak from my own personal experience. That was my father. When I lost my dad, I was angry with God because I didn't believe my dad deserved to be killed. Taking away he was, but I didn't feel that me and my sister deserved to be fatherless. And I couldn't understand, with me being a person that was always after God's heart, who always had a relationship with God, why was this happening to me? And for so long, I lost sight of who I was because I lost sight of who God was. And I was angry with God because he took my father from me. And I still struggle. I'm no longer angry, but I still struggle with the loss of my dad every single day. But I remind myself that God is the father to the fatherless, the mother to the motherless. Because let's be real, my mom is still well and alive. Well, she's alive. I won't say she's well because she's battling a bunch of mental things herself. That's, you know, not going to get too deep into that. But I don't have a relationship with my mom. But I remember that God is the father to the fatherless and the mother to the motherless. He's my parent, you know. He's my friend. He guides me. He leads me. But that doesn't 100,000% fill the void that I get when I look at my son and I start crying because I have to think about, I'm going to have to tell my son one day because he's going to want to know, where's my grandparents? Where is my granddad? Where's his granddad? Like, or his dad? Where's my grandma? Like, where are these people at that are supposed to be here with me, doing life with me? And sometimes, as for me, as a parent, I feel guilty because I had those things. And I'm like, that's not something I could have controlled. I had every one of my grandparents here with me. But my son has none on my side. He has his my mother. But like I said, he knows her, but he doesn't know who she is. So that hurts me. Because it's just like, whew, you know, sometimes I ask myself, like, how am I going to do this? Like, and I dread that day because I get anxious about it. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to tell him, you know, because he's going to want to know, like, why my friend has a grandparent. Where's my granddad? Where's my grandma? Where's this person? Where's that person? And I'm going to have to be the one to tell him. They're gone, baby. I'm sorry, you know, but this is who he was. And the hardest part about that too is I don't have many pictures of my dad. I don't have many physical memories because all those things were taken from me like right after he passed. So it's hard. Excuse me, I'm trying to get myself together. Told you guys, when God calls you deeper, you go deeper. And oh my God, I do the best I can. But yeah, you know. But sometimes you lose sight of what it is that God is doing because you're holding on to the thing that left. But you realize that it's the collateral beauty, you know. In the midst of me losing my father, that's when I really honed in. And I lost myself. I lost my relationship. Like, not I lost my relationship with God, but I lost sight because I was angry with God. Because I didn't feel that it was right that I lost my dad. I didn't feel like me and my sister would have to go fatherless after having a father. And for my sister, my heart really hurt for her because she didn't have the relationship with my dad that I had. Because we were, you know, a few years apart. And, you know, it was harder when she was coming up and things like that. So I had a longer relationship with him. I won't say a better relationship, but I had a longer relationship with him. And we were closer because I got to know him. And we did life a little bit longer together, so she didn't get that opportunity. And sometimes I feel guilty about that, and I know that's nothing that I can control, but that's just the weight that things will carry on you. And if you carry it in your own strength and allow the enemy to continue to pile those things on you, it'll kill you. And that's what I was reminded of when I got to figure out who this person was. Because in the beginning, he doesn't really show up as himself in the movie. You don't really know any much about him except he's a good basketball player. But then you start questioning and wondering, well, why didn't basketball work out? And then in the end, you find out he got a full ride scholarship. And then you see why he didn't take it, because of anger. The moral of the story is this person is who you see today because of his anger. He let anger drive him from the calling that God had on his life, or make him run away from it, you know. And that's everybody's reality. It could be everybody's reality if we don't properly let those things go and give it to God and properly work through it and go through some things. Sometimes we don't want to go through the ugliness to get the beauty of it, you know. And you have to, you can't omit the process. You have to go through that thing and see it through, because in the end, the person that you're going to become, you're going to look back over yourself. There's things I look back on myself and I say, whew, Lord, you did a number on me, because the person I used to be, I used to be a person that used to cuss every other word. And now, you know, I find myself every night, and it's funny because I'm immediately like, Lord, I'm sorry. I almost went back there, you know. And you got to be real with yourself, because you got to take accountability. It starts with accountability. But now I'm like, you know, my talk is different. You know, when you talk to me, I'm not cursing, you know. For the most part, like I said, if I slip away real quick, I'm like, what? And I said, oh, Lord, I said, you know what? Nope. I'm sorry. I repent. I do not, you know, I don't talk like that no more. And that's nothing against somebody that still may be going through that cursing phase. That's your walk. And my thing is, you can't condemn people because your walk doesn't look like theirs. You teach them and you tell them the truth and you love them to the truth, but they got to go through their own walk, just like I had to go through. I've always been a follower of Christ. I've always been a believer. I didn't just wake up this year following God. I've always been like that. And I always knew that when I was younger, I cursed bad. Like, oh my God, every other word, for the most part. Not like in my everyday speak, but when it came down to it, when it came down to the attitude me, like, I'm cursing every other word. When you piss me off, the first word out of my mouth is a curse word. This is like every other word. Not like every, like when you see people and it's like every other word, it's just having casual conversation. It's like they're cussing. You're like, oh, that irritates me. Especially as a woman, because I feel like, you know, I digress. But for me, it was like whenever I'm going off on somebody, the flip of the switch was fast. I went from just being, you know, this person that's calm, cool, and collected to rah, 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 from 0 to 1,000 real quick. But I'm thankful that now I think before I speak, especially now because my son is 3 and he's repeating everything he hears too, which, like I said, I don't really for the most part talk like that anymore. And when I do flip up, because I'm like back, and that's how easy, and that's why I don't get mad about Peter when he runs back to fishing, because I know how easy it is for me to run back to my past. It's easy to run back to what's familiar. So you can't judge Peter because he ran back out of fear, and he ran back because he ran back to what he was used to. And just like when I watched this movie, I couldn't judge him for drinking his problems away, because at some point, we all have our coping mechanisms for our problems. We emotionally eat, we shop, we may go out, we may drink wine, we may, smoke, whatever your coping mechanism is, but you got to let God do a work in you so that you can release those things. So with me, I'm just like, hey, it's on judgment zone. I can talk you through it. I can give you the truth and pray for you, but judgment, I can't, because I'm no better than the next person. That's who God has called us to be. We're not perfect. If we were perfect, there would be no need for God, because God is our only perfection. We are perfected through him, but we are not perfect. Nobody you see is perfect. We are humans. We are flawed on purpose. So you have to remember that, you know? So, yeah, but I was reminded of, you know, when he said that, you know, we all have our cross to bear. It reminded me of Matthew 10:38 and 16:34. And then, like I said, remind me of Jesus and Peter in John 21:15, when God comes back and he tells them, you know, follow me, be a leader of my lamb, be a fisher of men, do what I tell you to do. It reminded me because he ran back to his past and God met him there. And he says, why are you running from where I called you to? I don't care what you did. I know you denied me 3 times, but you're still called. You know? You're still called. But so as the movie goes on, there's a man who he was a friend of the coach, Jack. He was a friend of his father. So he basically watched over Jack. And like anytime he would go to the bar and get drunk, he would make sure that he got him home safely. He would make sure that he wouldn't drive. So like he was kind of like his guardian angel, you know, this man here, because he didn't have to. Because I think about like when my dad passed and I think about like all of his friends and stuff, I'm like, I haven't talked to those people since my dad died, you know. The people that you think like would be there to, you know, step up and play that role. And that's why I think it's so important about, you know, who you allow around you and who you trust with your kids, because when it's all said and done, you want people that's going to be there to still show up for you, even when you aren't physically here. And I think it's so funny, because I was talking about like the godparent process, like how people choose their godparents. And I say, I was reminded of like, there were people that was upset with me about, you know, the way I chose, but to this day, I don't regret the choosing that I chose. And I know on one side of it, you know, there will be, you know, changes once the Lord, you know, puts that out. But for the most part, you know, I am, and I think for me, my choice was based off of my experience. And I realized, like, even with who my godmother was and who my sister's godmother was, and the fact that we lost our father, and in that sense, we really needed somebody to step up and not even just play or check on us for our father, but for our mother too, because in the midst of that, you know, my mom kind of lost it, you know, once my dad passed. It was just that bad. And so, you know, you have to take things serious. Like when it comes to my son, I'm like, I got to set you up for success. I can't set you up for failure. And I'm going to do my best in doing that. And I'm going to seek God and seek wise counsel on who that person is. I don't care how people feel about it, because at the end of the day, when I leave this world, I want to know that my son is in the right hands. I don't want people taking advantage of him the way that me and my sister were taking advantage of, across the board, you know? So I don't know. That wasn't a part of my message, but that may be for somebody. So, what else? So I started just writing down like the scores just to give you guys context, because it just shows you that even when you're not qualified, and I'm sorry, you guys, I'm like really congested, but it shows that even when you're not qualified, this man didn't know nothing about coaching, but he knew everything about basketball. So he, I started writing down the game. So the first game that they showed was 31 to 67. So 31 was their points, 67 was the other team. So they was beat by a good little mile. Then going forward, it was 38 to 72. They still lost. So this was the 10th game. So they were 9-1. They won one game at this point, and they lost 9. So by the 10th game, they were at 38 to 72. So they lost pretty bad. And then for the most part, it started going up. 49 to 43, 67 to 58, 59 to 55, 62 to 48, 59 to 52, 60 to 63. So they started winning. They were like undefeated at one point. And that just goes to show, and I wrote that down for context, because it goes to show that even when you're not sure about how to show up and do the things that God has called you to do, you do the best you can with what God gives you. And you don't neglect it. You do it the best way you can. So you literally use what God gives you to pave the way, you know? You use what resources you have, what gifts God's giving you to do what it is he calls you to do. And that's what we see here. And that's why I wrote down the scores to the game, because I felt like that was important context, because as you hear, the numbers jump up as time progresses. In the first, like I said, they lost 9 games out of 10. They lost 9-1-1. So when they got serious, and as the coach took it more serious, they started, you know, implementing what he advised and started taking the game more serious. So that's why I included that, because I thought that was important to just see the increase, because sometimes we walk into it feeling like, well, I'm not even qualified to do this. But the numbers alone just shows you that you are more than qualified. If God calls you to it, he will see you through it. So you have to be willing to use the Lord's resources. He will give you guidance and lead you to where he's called you to. He's not going to call you and then just throw you out to the wolves. So I thought that was important. And then there was a scene where one of the, I think it was the bishop, he ended up telling him, like, you know, listen, do you think you can work on, like, your cursing? Because we are, it was, I think it was called Bishop Hayes. It was a Christian church, or, you know, a church school. And he's like, you know, we have a motto. We have a standard to keep here. So even though I know you're just a coach and, you know, whatever, whatever, we still have a standard, because it's not just about winning basketball games, but it's about developing men of integrity and faith. And so Jack, the coach, asked the father of the church, or the, you know, the school, does he really believe that God cares about his inappropriate language with all of the terrible things going on in the world? And so the bishop responds, as Christians, we are called by God to integrate our faith into our daily lives. Don't underestimate the impact you can have on them. So basically saying that, you know, the smallest thing, as you answering a call to show up and coach these kids, they look up to you. Like, don't underestimate how powerful the call is that God has placed on your life. They're watching your every move. They're watching your every step. They're watching how you show up, because you have a leadership role in their life as their coach. And that goes for you. Wherever God has called you to, you have a leading role in somebody else's life. Somebody is where you're at needing what you bring, because you bring the light to their darkness. You bring light through the darkness. You pull them out of a place where they felt like they were helpless. So don't underestimate the call. Don't underestimate you. Don't underestimate God. Because technically, when you walk into something and you think, well, I could never do this, it's pride, because God knows what he's doing. You're not perfect. You ain't all that in a bag of chips. Okay? That you are too qualified for God. So you have to really just hone in and trust his process. Trust that he knows best, and he's going to place you where you need to be, and your shine, your light is going to shine regardless. And sometimes it won't even be on purpose. It'll just be because that's who you are. This man didn't think he was qualified, because he was built with anger because of the things and the situations that happened to him in his past. And sometimes, you know, we have to step back and just say, you know what, God? You're right, I am qualified. And sometimes you got to also realize that God sees something in us that we don't even see in ourselves. And sometimes other people around us can see it. You know, obviously the father of this church saw something in the coach that he didn't see in himself. You know, despite what he was going through, he was remembered by what, you know, the impact he left. And he saw fit to give him a call to offer him this position that seemed impossible. But and even though he tried to disqualify himself, he still answered the call. And that comes to me. Sorry, that brings me to the next topic. There's a scene in the movie where they're having a car ride home, where the coach is taking the best player on the team, Brandon. He's taking him home. And he tells him he played a great game and advises him that on the next game to take the shot. And so Brandon looks up at him and he says, that he took the move that was smarter. Like, he made a smarter play for the team, because he didn't want to take a risk of taking a shot and him not making it. So he played safe, right? And so the coach responds that sometimes the smart play is not the right play. He reassures him that he's the best player on the team. He wants him to take the shot. And then the coach turns and asks him, why is it so hard for you to believe that you're the best player on the team? And he tells him that he understands the game in ways the other team players don't. And the coach also asked him, like, you know, well, if I may, and Brandon replies that, you know, I didn't take the shot because I can't make that call. Like, I'm not the person on the team that makes that call. Again, making excuses as to why you can't answer the call that God has placed on your life. You're the best player on the team. And in that moment, yeah, maybe y'all didn't plan this for you to take the shot, but you could have took the shot because of your position and you're the best player. You understood that if you would have took the shot, y'all could have potentially won the game, but because you were afraid and because you were afraid of taking risks, you chose to make the smarter move. But sometimes the smarter move, the logical move, is not always the wisest move, because God doesn't move out of logic. He moves out of what's best in his interest. So what we see may not be what's fit for God, because God's ways is not our ways and his thoughts are not our thoughts. We are not God. We have to be still and know that he is God and we are man, human, you know, women, man. So we have to trust that whatever he tells us to do, we have to do it, even if it scares us. Even if I feel like, oh, dang, I can't make this shot. Or what if I make it and I don't make it? What if I shoot the ball and it doesn't get in? You got to take the shot to even know what the outcome is. If you shoot it and it doesn't make it, that's okay. You get another free throw. You stand up to that line and you shoot that ball, whether it makes it or not. Your team will recognize you stood and you gave it a chance. You tried. You got to get in the court and play the game. You got to stand at that line and make the shot. Take the shot. Rather, not make it, but take it. Because in order for you to take it, that determines what the outcome is. If you never took the shot, you're going to consistently be in your head wondering, well, what if? There is no what if you took the shot. And that's when he comes back and he says that, you know, I'm not a person that makes this call. And he says, well, what if I made you the person who does? How would this team be led if I made you captain? And so he looks at him. He tells him, like, you know, we just pulled up at my house. And so he gets out or whatever. And so going forward, he at the next practice, the coach ends up making him the captain. And the original captain, the guy, I think Sam, who was the original captain. Let me look back and make sure that's who. Yeah, he was the captain. He goes up to him and he said, you know, good luck, bro. He said, we're gonna follow your lead. We trust you. Like, what? You know how for men, first of all, like, to be on a group of basketball team where you were originally captain, and for a coach to be like, oh, I'm taking you off captain and putting somebody else on, a lot of men wouldn't be able to handle that. Like, what you mean you taking me off? What you mean? What you mean you moving me down? What you mean I'm just a regular player now? I don't call the shots. But this man was embracing, because this man probably seen the best player in this other dude, but never realized, never said anything. He probably knew the whole time that he wasn't capable of doing and leading the team the way that this other guy would. So when it was time for him to step down, he did that with honor and respect. He said, whatever you call out, bro, we got you. That's what it's about. Team playing. You get on a team and you play as a team. You come together. That's also what I learned when I was watching the movie and watching the plays. I'm like, in order for a team to win, you have to play together. You got to know how to communicate. And sometimes on the field, on the court, not even talking, just giving that person that look like, you ready? You, all right, I'm going to pass it to you. You going to shoot it? Or, you know, give me a head nod this way. Like, you want me to, what you want me to do? Sometimes it's not even about verbal communication. It's about sign, like, body language. If I look at you and you give me that look and I'm like, I bet. I'm going to go up to the free throw line. I'm going to throw that ball. Or, you know, whatever the call is. You tell me that. But you the only people who are going to understand that language is the people that are on your team. Because that's a language you guys created. The same way with God. The only person who's going to understand what God is telling you is you and God. So I thought that was awesome, because I was like, golly, you know, that was a very respectable moment, you know. And like I said, people see the potential in us, and sometimes we don't see it in ourselves. And then when we get stepped up to that call, you know, this man literally said, whatever you call out, bro, we got you. You good. You got this. So I thought that was awesome, because I'm like, wow, you know, I could only imagine him being like, you know what, I remember watching another movie similar to this one, and one of the teammates, like, when things started shifting, people like, oh, I'm leaving the team, or when change, some people can't accept change, so they run from it, because it's like, oh, I'm not in the position that I once was, so I can't fit on this team because I'm a leader. One whole time, they don't have leader qualities. They don't have leader ability. So, you know, I've seen plenty of movies where people do that. They walk away because they want to go somewhere where they feel like, oh, I can lead. But maybe it's not your time to lead yet. Maybe you got to do a little bit of following so that you can be the right leader for somebody. So I thought that was good. But going back to what I mentioned earlier about the diamond press, this is a play that they created called the diamond press. So he says that the diamond press, it requires two things, toughness and quickness, right? So this is a play that he created for the team. And so I thought that was cool because when you think about the pressing of diamonds, they're tough. But diamonds are precious. And they can withstand the pressure. And I said, wow, that's crazy because that's what we go through in life. You're a diamond to God. You're precious. And sometimes you have to go through the process. You have to go through the pressure to come out that shiny, sparkling diamond. And everyone is unique. Everyone goes through their own pressures. Everyone has to bear their own crosses. And when he says it requires two things, toughness and quickness. So you got to be tough and you got to be quick on your feet. You got to be responsive. When God says go, go. And even when he says go, it's not going to be easy. You got to stand in faith and be tough through it. Fight the enemy and put on the whole armor of God. Because the enemy is going to be after you that much more. He's going to be after you that much more. So, and just going back to just the meaning of like basketball, the team, were a few takeaways that I put, like, cause once they started, you know, building the team and recognizing, you know, their weaknesses and everything like that. So they start doing this routine where he asked them, you know, what did we learn from tonight's game? So that was to me where it's like, dang, every game is a lesson, right? So in the beginning, you guys were 10-9-1. You played 10 games, you lost 9 and won one game. But then they started being undefeated. And then as they were learning, as they continued to play each game, he would ask them, what did we learn from today's game? And a few things that I wrote down was defense creates offense. Maintain pressure for all four quarters. We got to take charges. Play with the chip on your shoulder. Little things add up. Do all the little things right. All the shots add up. Put it all together, the team becomes pretty tough to beat. Have the respect for the game. And I thought that was good because not only can you use that in basketball, but let's be real, you can use that in your everyday life. If you respect the game, you know how to play it because you understand it that much more. And when he says, add all the shots up, like everything adds up. Everything that you go through is necessary and it adds up in the end. The math may not be mathing right now, but in the end, it's going to make sense. You may not see that thing when you're on the court playing, but when you step back and you go in that locker room and you say, you know what, dang, you right, I could have did that. I could have took that shot or I could have went this way. I could have, blocked this person. But in it, I was under pressure. But in the pressure, you got to be quick and you got to think. You got to ask, okay, God, what you want me to do? Like when David was being chased by Saul. If David had ran that mile by himself, if he had ran away on his own and did what he thought was best, he would have messed up. Because he wouldn't have had God leading him. He would have ran right into the enemy's hand. So don't run thinking that you outsmarting the enemy the whole time you're running to him. Seek God and don't move until you have peace about what God tells you to do. When God speaks, you move. Move with quickness because sometimes if you wait, that's also another thing. Think about the shot clock, right? When you're standing at that free throw line or when the game is tied, the whole time when you're watching the movie or watching the game, they say, watch the clock. And then at the end, they're like, take the shot. Like you may got 20 seconds on the clock. Take the shot. You may only got 10 seconds on the clock. Take the shot. Because in that 10 seconds, you know how long it takes for a ball to leave your hand to get in the hoop? Take the shot. How many times have you seen a basketball game where there's like 30 seconds on the clock? Somebody shoots the ball and then it slows down and you're like, oh my God, I don't know if it's going to make it. That's this moment. Take the shot. If you miss it, you miss it, but at least you tried. You don't walk away with what is. You walk away with, I tried my best. I gave it my all. It was 30 seconds on the clock, and I did what I could. Either I won it or I learned a lesson. You know, you got to play with like you got everything to lose because you do. The enemy wants you to lose it all. But God came so that you can have life and life abundantly. John 10:10. The enemy doesn't want you to walk away with nothing. Nada. Nothing. So I'm like, you know, I thought this is good. And I'm like, wow. You know, you just never know how much something so simple as a movie can just let you know so many life lessons. You learn so much from just looking at stuff and taking the takeaways, you know, taking pointers from things that you can apply. Something so simple as basketball. I can take this movie and dissect it and apply it to our real lives. And I can also apply it back to scripture. Ain't that crazy? How everything points back to God. So as we fast forward, closing out, there's a few more things I want to go over. And bear with me, because like I said, this was I got a lot of takeaways. I didn't really realize I was going to have this many. But like I said, I hope that each and every one of them speaks to somebody, you know, and it helps you figure some things out and help you get focused and just trust God enough to take the shot of wherever he's calling you to and wherever he's doing in your life to change your perspective, change your point of view, you know. Because when you look at the basketball game, sometimes your view hinders what you see. If you're sitting high up, you may be able to look down, but if you're sitting right there, you may not see something somebody sitting higher up looks at. So you have to remember, you're not always sitting higher up because God's up there. We're down here on the ground looking at eye level. So change your perspective about what God's doing in your life and ask God, God, what are you doing? Because I know that when it feels like you're doing nothing, you're doing something. God is never sleeping. He sits high and look low. He sees what we don't. When we're in here laying down with our eyes closed, dreaming, taking a rest, God is up, working on your behalf, working all things together. And so basically, you know, going down, there was another car ride where the dude Brandon, basically, like, the coach ends up losing his cool. Like, he ends up losing it on the basketball field. And like I told you guys, this man suffers with anger. Anger is the root of all of his issues. So anger points back to him losing his son. He lost his wife. He gave up his scholarship because he didn't really have a good relationship with his dad. There's a lot of things that he has that creates this anger. And he never dealt with it. He filled those things up with the wrong voice. Like he turned to alcoholism instead of turning into giving it to God. So when we fill our voice with the wrong thing, we still carry those things. It just feels a little lighter because, okay, now I'm drunk and I can't really think about it. And now I can remember thinking about the past. I can think about the good times because I don't have to sit here in anger and remember the bad times of watching my son go through radiation and watching me walk away from that scholarship because my dad was taking advantage of me, or just, you know, me just having this life that I never thought I would have, you know, me not showing up for my wife, whatever that looked like. That's, I'm imagining what that looks like for him. So when he's drinking his problems away, you know? So then the car ride home and the guy, Brandon, asked the best player on the team. He asked them, you know, he said, you know what my dad told me? My dad told me that you had a full ride scholarship, but you gave it up. Why'd you do that? And so basically what I said to dad is like, oh, you instilling this pressure in us, you building us up, but you had a full ride and you didn't even take it. So what's up with that? Like you see the best player in me, but I see the best player in you. And I know you still capable of what you did back then. So tell me, you had a full ride. What happened? And ain't that just like us? Like, oh, you see it in me, but I see it in you. So what's up? You know, and that's how I took it, you know, that's how I figured he asked him, because that's how it came off. But so the coach revealed, he replied that he didn't get back, his time, and he didn't accept the scholarship because he was mad with his father. And so he did it out of anger. He did it out of spite for his dad, because his dad didn't want anything to do with him, but because he saw how good of a player. And that's why I said before, people around you see the potential. Even if they're not connected closely to you, they still see it. Somebody giving them access to what you're doing. Somebody is linking the link to you to show what you're doing. And people want to be a part of that, whether it's them being associated with it, like closely or by far. People want to associate with themselves with that. And basically his dad didn't want anything to do with him. But when he found out that he was going to be this star athlete, he started showing love for him. But when really it wasn't the love for him, it was the love for what he could do for him. Oh, you finna make it in the big time league, so you finna be able to take care of me. I'm finna be a star of a dad, like a dad of a star. Like, the dad only saw what he could get out of it. And so, because he said he was angry, that made him angry, he decided to walk away from a full ride scholarship. And that changed his life forever, because now you're not living this NBA life. You're living the life that you created for yourself. And sometimes if we don't surrender our anger and surrender our flaws to God, we will walk out of the blessing that God has for us. But don't you know that God is a God of reservation? He will hold the spot for you until it's your time. No, he's not an NBA player in this moment, but he's back on the court and he's coaching. And not only is this probably greater than being an NBA player, because he's leaving an impact on these 10 kids' lives. And not only that, he's already paved the way because people know this man's name. Even though he's been graduated, he ain't stepped in the court in years. And he says this. That's why he said, I can't do this. I haven't played the game in years. I don't even know how to show up. And I don't even know if I can shoot. When really this man knows basketball is his heart. You can do basketball even if you never played in years. You can step out there like you never left. Because a person that has a passion for something, it don't matter how long you put down that thing. And when you go to pick it up, it's like you never left. It's like that best friend you have that you don't talk to every day, but when y'all get together, it's like a moment never passed by. That's how it is when you're passionate and you just have a heart for something and you fully understand that thing. It don't matter how long you walked away from it. You can still go on like you never left it. So he walked away from a full ride scholarship because he didn't want his dad taking advantage of him. And that made him angry. He was pissed off because you don't love me. You love me for what I can do for you. But God turned that thing into something better. The enemy intended it for evil, but God turned around and intended it for good. Because now this is the very thing you walked away from, and now I'm walking you back to it so that I can help you deal with your anger. And I know you might be saying, well, how is he dealing with his anger? I'm going to get to that. So he went on to say that he lived a life full of regret. He let basketball go and went on a wrong path. His wife was the only one who helped him through the pain. He spent a lot of time hurting himself, trying to hurt his father. He never picked up a basketball again. Right? So he basically created his own pain and his own life out of anger, and it ended up damaging him. And he ended up going and getting into a bunch of worldly things that he should have never even known about had he just would have surrendered and said, you know what, God, regardless of what my father is trying to do, I'm going to go do this thing because this is the calling that you have on my life. But do you know that God is a God of second chances? No, he didn't go back to an NBA scholarship and a full ride, but he got to be a coach and make an impact on kids that will take that and live with that for the rest of the night. Because let me tell you something, that one thing that you do for somebody, they will never forget it. I could sit here and go over millions of things that have left a good impact on me and a bad impact. Things that I, no matter how much I try to forget, I will never forget it. I have good and bad. But those things shape you because you can remember that, oh, this person believed in me or this person said this about me. And now I don't have to prove them wrong because God has a greater calling over me. My life is not about proving something to anybody. I got to prove to myself that I'm worthy of the person that God has called me to be, because I don't feel technically I'm unworthy because we're not deserving of the love that God has for us, but he gives it anyway. So I got to walk this thing out until I feel it in my spirit that I can do this wholeheartedly. And so he takes accountability. He said, you know what, man? I created a lot of this for myself. I lost my wife. I lost my son. I wasn't there for my wife because I didn't know how to be there because I was angry. I was angry that my father didn't love me correctly. So I walked away from a scholarship ride. I was angry at God because he took my son when I felt like I was supposed to be here with my son living life. And I couldn't show up for my wife the way I needed to help her grieve our son because I was angry. And I can't show up for my friend at his son's baseball party for his birthday because I'm angry because my son's not here to see it. And so I drink these problems away. I sit at the bar day in and day out and just drink my life away because that's what coping looks like for me. And he admits that, you know, he admits that, you know, I have a life full of regret and I don't want that for you. You do what you feel is best for you. You do what God leads you to do. Not what your feelings tell you to do, because your feelings and your heart is deceitful. You're not led. Don't be led by those things, because those will lead us astray. But what else? So, long story short, there's a moment where there's a game. They're at the game before they make the playoffs, right? This game determines whether they go to the playoffs or not. If they win, if they lose, obviously they didn't go to the playoffs. But there's a moment where they already decide what play they're gonna make. But in the last hour, like, there's the time is literally counting down, and the coach looks over at Brandon, and he says, "Hey, come here." Right when they was finishing the timeout, and he says, "Take the shot." And the guy Brandon looked at him and he said, "You know what, coach? I got this. I got this." And he gets out there on that court. The time is winding down. They're like literally neck and neck. Did I write that score down? What was that score? I think it was the 60-63 was the score, I think. I can't remember. 57-55. I can't remember. I don't wrote down so many scores, but anyways, here you go. I wrote it down. He takes the shot that gets him into the playoffs. The score was 69-68. Do you see how close that is? 1 point away. He shot one shot in like seconds that changed their life forever. So now they're going to the playoffs. All because he decided to take the shot. So take the shot. Take the shot. I don't care how much time is moving. Take the shot. Trust yourself and trust that God trusts you enough to take the shot and make it. Take the shot. And so, while this is the greatest moment of his life because he gets to make the shot that takes his team over into the playoffs, this is where Jack's life starts changing. So, after that, he goes to the bar and he's drinking because one of his friends, the friends whose birthday party he showed up to for their kid, the kid ended up getting admitted to the hospital. Like, his separated wife called him and said, like, "Listen, come quick, they're at the hospital." And he goes and he's reminded of his son because he's like, you got to be kidding me. How does this happen? We were just at this kid's baseball. We were just at this kid's baseball game a couple weeks ago. How do we go from him playing baseball to now he's in here, you know, dealing with seizures and tumors and stuff like that? And so he walks out. He's like, "I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this." And so he walks out and his wife is like, "Well, where are you going?" So, of course, he goes to the bar. He gets pissy drunk. He gets home or whatever. And then he ends up oversleeping. And he comes into the court. He's drunk. He smells drunk. He smells like, you know, the night before. He looks like the night before. And obviously, the kids can see it. The assistant coach can see it. And so the assistant coach ends up telling the father, like, "Listen, you know, he overslept. He's, like, hours late to the thing. And he's drunk. Or, you know, he's hungover." And so they end up letting him go as the coach. And so he's like, "You know, don't do this. You know, it was a simple mistake." And so that moment there changed his life forever. Because, you know, the only thing that you had holding on to has now been taken from you. So now that's reverting you back to your past. Because you were already not coping with, you know, the whole situation with the kid thing, because it reminds you of your kid and how you lost your kid. And, you know, this child that you're coaching reminds you of how you walked away from a scholarship. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't just him. I'm pretty sure being on the court reminded him every day that he walked away from a scholarship because of his anger. So that alone could have been a lot. So he ended up, long story short, he ended up going back to the bar that night, getting drunk, and he ended up wrecking into somebody's boat. Then he ends up supposedly meeting up with this lady, but he enters the wrong house. And so it just ended bad for him. Like, and it's hard because he was on the right track, but sometimes the very things from your past that if you haven't fully resolved them, they will show up to destroy you. And, you know, he was in a place where he was reminded of his past, you know? And he didn't take it well because he never really dealt with that, you know? And so he ends up being hospitalized, and then he didn't get a chance to go see the boys play in the playoffs. And then he, you know, checks himself into getting some help with drinking, and then he calls his ex-wife and tells her, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I let our son down. I wasn't there for you when he passed, and I wasn't there for you as a husband. I didn't take care of you, and I hope that you can forgive me. Like, he starts being accountable because, like I said earlier, sometimes that light is so bright you can't see yourself. But do you know that God is a God who will restore your sight? And in the midst of this, he may feel like this was a setup from the whole time. And it was. It was a setup for him to be able to see him and see that you're not helping the situation by running from your problems. I understand you're mad because you lost your son. I understand your father didn't love you. I understand, you know, you're hurting so you can't be there for your wife. And all you do is drink your problems away. But I'm still here and I love you and I want you to come back. Like I said, the name of the movie was The Way Back. So he went through all of that. He lost his way just to be found again. God took him through all of that just to bring him back home. And sometimes that looks a little rough because, like I said, I was thinking the movie would end another way. And I was like, oh, man, he didn't even make it to the playoffs to see the kids play. You don't know what happens to him, but you know that at the end, he's there getting help. And it's never too late to get that help because, oh, my God, sometimes you just never even know how much something is weighing on you until you're faced with it again. You know? So, but that's pretty much it, you know? There was one takeaway. The boy Brandon, his father, the coach ended up going to his job because the father never showed up to his son's game. And so he asked me, he's like, you know, we had plenty of games. I never see you there. He's like, oh, I got two other boys. He doesn't have a mom. Their mom passed or whatever. And so he's like, well, I got two of the boys that have to eat and get clean. And he was like, you know, it only takes a second to come to the game. And so he tells him, he's like, you know, if you put your faith in basketball, it never ends well. Anybody should know that it's you, you know, just representing the whole scholarship thing. And so he was like, you know, and the coach recognizes his dad because he's like, oh, you know, I know you do good at basketball. That's where your son get it from. And he's like, yeah, I recognize you too. And he tells him, like, when you put your faith in basketball, it doesn't end well. It'll fail you. And that's why I was just like, you're right. When you put your faith in the wrong things, it will fail you. But when you put your faith in God, it will prevail. You're like, you will win. Had he would have put his faith in God and laid down that anger and forgave himself, he could have been a basketball player. But imagine had he not would have done that and he accepted the scholarship, he still would have lost it all because he wasn't filling those voids with the right thing. He would have been filling it with money, drugs, women, whatever, fame. Because your anger doesn't change just because you're an NBA player. So you can't run away and sweep your problems under the table, you know? You can't let the wrong things fill it up. You got to let God fill you up and renew you, you know? We can't change the past, but we can choose how we move forward. And it's so crazy because I wrote down that he hadn't been in the playoffs in 25 years. So he hadn't been in court playing the basketball game in 25 years. But look how he shaped those men's life. Look how he was able to come in. Never done coaching before. Never ran a play himself. But look how he took what he knew and used it for good 25 years later. Do you know that's nobody but God? And lastly, I want to end with, like I said, he ends up going to getting help, you know, and the boys end up going to the playoffs. And so the boy Brandon's like, you know what, let's do this in honor of Coach. And so as the movie is ended out, you hear the spokespeople talking, and the one guy says, you know, they're talking about Jack and how he's a legend. Like, we know this man. He came in, never coached before. He was a legend. He was in the playoffs 3 years, 4 years in a row. He's the best player we know. He's a legend. And he came in and shaped these boys' lives for the better. And so he ends up saying that. But you have to imagine he'd be very proud of the way these boys are playing. Because they end up saying, like, you know, unfortunately, he wasn't able to come. They don't know why he didn't come. But obviously, you know, he's at rehab or whatever. And so he says, you know, but you have to imagine that he'd be very proud of the way these boys are playing. Jack was tough, intense, competitive, and the best player. and he has instilled these boys with all of these qualities that made him such a winner. You can see Jack imprint all over the team, a clear vision of their coach. I've never seen a high school with this much composure. It reminds me of Esther, her story, because like I tell you guys all the time, God's name is never once mentioned in there, but it's written all over it. You know that the things and the happenings that took place in that story or in that part of the Bible, they were not put there for coincidence. They were put there for a reason. God's name is never mentioned, but you know he orchestrated it. You don't have to really read God's name in there to know that, ooh, that was ordained by God. Esther was called for such a time as this, just like you are called for such a time as this to do what it is that God has called you to do. And let's be clear, you're not there just for you. You're there to get the light out towards other people who are in darkness. You are there to leave God's imprint in this world, to shed light on darkness, to bring people back to God, to show them the way home by just being yourself. Sometimes we overthink it and like, oh, I gotta show up this way. No, you show up as you because that's how God called you. God called you to be you. And that's why some people don't get called, because they don't know how to show up as themselves because they don't like who they are. God doesn't want a fabricated version of you. He wants the real, authentic you. He wants you to show up in the world doing what he's calling you to do and do it the way you do it. That's why he called you to it. And don't underestimate the call, because the call is important. And if God has called you to it, you are more than capable enough of accomplishing the thing that God has placed you in. So, I know this is really long-winded, but I hope the message was clear. Take the shot. That free throw line is waiting for you to walk up to it, to pick up that ball, to shoot it. And if you don't make it the first time, you'll get another chance to do it. You keep shooting until you make it. Make that free throw. Take the shot. Take the shot. So that's all I have for you guys. I hope this is good. I hope it helped you. As always, remain grateful because it makes you gorgeous. I hope that this really spoke to you and it pressed in on your heart for whatever God has told you to do and you have not done it because you're afraid. Put that fear down and pick up that ball and take the shot. Pick up the ball of faith and take that shot. Don't worry about how somebody else is doing it or what somebody else is doing or how they're doing it. You do it the way you're supposed to do it. Go where God has called you. So, I will talk to you guys on the next episode. Bye.